Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, another episode hosted by me this week, John Steele. I'm joined again by Mike Innes. Mike, how's it going? You all right?
It's going very well, John. Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yes, excellent. Yes, Mike, I was billing you as a special guest on quite a few shows, but since you're becoming more and more part of the furniture in a good way, I'll probably just drop that and just call you a guest for now, if that's okay. Okay, so Mike, we're back here because we're going to start and look at part two of our big J2 season preview for 2021. Part one has been pretty well received, I think largely down to your hard work and contributions, so thanks for that. We've got a lot of teams to talk about and a lot of listener questions to hopefully answer as well, so we should get straight into it, I think, if that's okay. Real quick, before we do, we should quickly mention in our part one pod, we talked about Kita Kyushu. We didn't talk about the fine that they received from the J-League last week for inflating their attendance figures. That's because I don't think it was announced when we were actually recording. So that's something that happened afterwards. We probably would have talked about it a little. Nothing too major, but worth mentioning that they have been in trouble for cooking their books ever so slightly, we can say. And it's been a problem for quite a few J-League teams down the years, I think. And yeah, real quick, apologies to the Kyoto goalkeeper, Tomoya Wakahara. His name completely escaped me when we were talking about Kyoto in part one as well. So apologies to him. Yes. Okay, so let's get straight to it. Mike, in part two of our season preview, we're going to be talking about the teams that finished from 10th down to 16th in the 2020 standings. So 10th place last year, a pretty stellar campaign for Tochigi. They're back again, naturally, for 2021, still managed by Kazuaki Tasaka, who did brilliantly to get them into 10th place last year. We had a question on Tochigi from our good friend Kanazawa Dreamin on Twitter. He asked, do you think Tochigi are going to be able to build on that 10th place finish from last year, or are they going to slip back down to lower mid-table where we normally find them? And what do you think about Tochigi and the transfer ins and outs that they've had this winter?
What an amazing season Tochigi had, didn't they? I don't think anybody really fancied them for anything approaching a mid-table finish. But they have escaped what's happened to Kita Kyushu, haven't they? You know, having overachieved, they have still managed to maintain most of their squad. There's only been three players who've left Tochigi who I would say are really, really sort of important. And those are Masaya Tashiro, a huge guy, a big guy, who central defender. He's gone to Tosu. And their rookie kind of star turn, Takahiro Akimoto, has gone to Urawa. I think that he has obviously picked up quite a lot of attention, and even got mentioned on Big Pod on their preview of Reds. I'll also draw a little bit of attention to another rookie, a right back, Hayato Kurosaki. Blimey, it's a while since I've seen a thing moving as fast on a football pitch as him. The boy has got lightning pace, so that might help Oita a little bit. So three kind of important players have gone from Tochigi up into J1. But I think you can make some sort of broader observations about people leaving Tochigi. It would be, I think, a bit strange to preview them without talking about the departure of Hitoshi Shiota, their veteran goalkeeper. Is he 38? I think he's 39. And he's also gone to Urawa. Even saying those words, hearing them coming out of my mouth, I can't really believe it, because he played for Omiya for a couple of seasons and he was no good for us. So I'm finding that a little bit difficult to grasp. Then you've got Kazuki Segawa. He was a left back, and I think this raises interesting questions about the kind of like the economics maybe of Tochigi. He's gone to a Kanto League team, Kriyasan Shinjuku. I know they've got, I think they seem to have quite a lot of money, But that's, you know, he's been an important player. You know, not he's not a fringe player. He's gone to a Kanto League team. That seems very striking to me. And then a central midfielder, Wu Sang-ho, who's gone to Saigon FC in Vietnam. You and Stuart were talking in your last pod, weren't you, about players leaving Japanese teams and going to other leagues, leagues in Southeast Asia, as an example there. But the I think for me it is a bit easier to talk about the outgoing players. For me, when it comes to the people that they've signed, the most interesting one I think is Kota Ueda. He's sort of 34. He's come from Okayama, but he's got a lot of experience, particularly from Iwata. He played for them for quite a long time. Central midfielder, and few better with a dead ball than Kota Ueda. He's a class act in that kind of situation. But I'm not sure if there's too much else to attract our interest when it comes to the arrivals. Although I know that you were quite keen on Junki Hata, aren't you, John, who's come from Nagasaki on loan.
Yeah, I was quite surprised to see him leaving Nagasaki, to be honest, albeit on loan, because he impressed me when I saw him last year. I do think for Tochigi, you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned the finances, I think, Mike, because of all the players, they do have quite a few players who've come in the transfer window, but nine of them are on loan, including Daisuke Kikuchi from Kashiwa, we talked about, Kotaro Arima, his loan from Kashima has been extended, and Junki Hata, as we're talking about him, he's coming on loan as well. So I think that does tell us a little bit about the finances. And I think that the star man really is probably the coach, isn't it? Kazuaki Tasaka, who was so impressive in kind of converting them from the team that was probably least fun to watch in 2019 to a really kind of swashbuckling at times and a free-flowing outfit in 2020. So I think keeping him has been really important. I'm no doubt the phone rang a few times with clubs maybe interested in him taking him away, you know, to somewhere with more money to spend on players. And I think you're also right to pick out Kota Ueda. From a free kick taker perspective, he is a really good striker of the ball, very dangerous, takes penalties as well. The other player who's come in I'm interested in seeing is Juninho from Kyoto, who I don't think really ever made any impact there at Kyoto Sanga. So I'm interested to see if he is any good, basically. I haven't seen him that much, so I don't know. I don't think he got that much game time for Kyoto. So maybe it could be an interesting midfield if Kota Ueda and Juninho are involved. My prediction for Tochigi, to be honest, is that they will be pretty safe and comfortable in mid-table. Lower mid-table, possibly. I think they have... I was so impressed with the manager last year. I can't imagine that they are going to end up being in any real relegation trouble. But I also don't think there's enough quality and enough strength and depth for them to do anything other than a great season for them would be 10th again. And I don't think anybody's really expecting that. Can you, what do you think, Mike? Is my assessment okay? Or do you think they could do better than 10th? Are they going to be worse than 10th this year?
I agree very much with your point about the coach. He's very sort of charismatic, isn't he? You can imagine him being a very good leader of a squad of players and communicating very clearly about his ideas. I would say that I don't think it's going to be very often that Tochigi turn up a player who's as good as Akimoto. Bearing in mind that last season, that was his first season, it was a rookie season for him, and he started 38 times, and he really does look for J2, he does look a really good player. So I think that they're going to find it quite difficult to maintain that standard. I think that the idea of Wader coming in and that raises a few questions about their approach. He I'm not quite sure how he fits in with their sort of style of play. But I mean, at heart, what they're really trying to do, I think, is to find players to go alongside Kishore Yano. And it'll be interesting to see how the guys that they've brought in might do that. So I can't believe that they're really going to sort of slip down to relegation places. But I think that you're right that 10th would be, if they're able to do that, that would be quite some achievement.
Fair enough. Perhaps they only agreed to sell Takehiro Akimoto to Ural if they promised to buy Hitoshi Ishioto as well. I don't know if maybe that was a kind of package deal. No, but yeah, I agree with you. That was a very eyebrow-raising transfer, and I think only bettered by Yoshito Okubo going back to Seretse Osaka from Tokyo. But we'll talk about that later.
Indeed, yeah. I think Shiota is less a football transfer and more an art prank.
Yeah, it's it'd be projected on the side of the Tate Modern or something. Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about Tochigi, I think, in enough detail, hopefully, to satisfy Kanazawa dreaming, Mike. We'll talk about Niigata now. Albirex Niigata, they finished in 11th last season. Fair to say that was pretty disappointing, I think, compared to their sort of pre-season aspirations. We got quite a few questions about Niigata when we put the call out on Twitter for questions before recording. Akakichino 11 asking, do you think Albirex can be a promotion contender this year because they've managed to keep hold of Shion Honma, the Twinkle Toad left-sided attacker. Nagasaki Blue and Orange, are Niigata any better than last season? They've kept Honma, signed Koji Suzuki, but they've lost Arata Watanabe, Chong Tizzy, and of course Fabio was sacked after his drink driving incident. And a new voice, FI Force 2, asking, will Koji Suzuki add many goals to the team this season? So just the three questions for you to wrestle with there, Mike. But I mean, more generally, what do you think about Niigata and the transfer business they've done?
Well, I think that few clubs have had such an interesting off-season as Niigata. Part of me is wondering fairly seriously if they have sort of managed the whole thing in terms of the announcement of their signings in order to create a narrative of interest around the club. Because first of all, there was the news that Chong Tese wasn't going to be remaining at the club after his great success of the second half of the 2020 season. He was the top scorer, even though he was only at the club for half of the year. And then on Christmas Day after that, so the club announced the signing of Koji Suzuki, as you've just said. He's had a couple of quiet seasons at Cerezo, but it's not like he doesn't know how to score goals in J2. He's been a very prolific striker at Machida and then lately at Ryukyu. And, he could sort of slot in to replace Chong Tise. Then before the new year, Niigata said they wouldn't be renewing with Mauro dos Santos or Silvinho, and those gaps in the squad have not been filled. And I think that is, potentially that is interesting, they've got somewhere to go, finances permitting. They also brought in arguably the J3 star of 2020. That's Kaito Taniguchi, who's come from Kumamoto. I think he's a really interesting player. I like to see when players score a lot of goals with one club, move to a bigger club, and continue that scoring rate. He's done that at Kumamoto, having moved to there from Iwate, from Guruja Morioka, where he began his career. Let's see if he's going to be able to continue that trajectory coming up into a higher division. And then into the early days of the new year, and they've got one of my favourites, I would say, Takahiro Ko. He was a very promising young central midfield player. He signed from Gamba, but he spent the last two seasons – as the leading light, really, at Yamaguchi. He actually has previous experience with Gamba under 23 and was playing for the first team at Gamba in 2018. And I think he's only 22 now. So he was playing for in the first team, I mean, a bit at Gamba when he was, he was 20 or maybe even 19. Definitely one to watch. Never stops moving, involved all over the pitch. He's quite aggressive, reads the game really well. Could be a very important signing, especially in the light of Nakajima's return to Seleso. And this is one of the things that makes me think, hold on, if they planned this whole thing out, because then they're saying Arata Watanabe, he's leaving for Oita. I mean, clearly a very good player, although unlucky with the injury last season, wasn't he? And then the news that every Albirex fan was hoping for, namely that Shion Honma has agreed to kind of like stay on. And it feels to me as if, this the kind of the narrative here, the direction of travel says, okay, everybody, this is an opportunity for us. We've got a chance here to, there's a chance that lies ahead of us. Nobody in this division is going to be particularly brilliant, and we've got a chance to go forwards with these incoming places, with these incoming players like Cole, like Suzuki, like Taniguchi, and also they've even got the returning club legend in the central defender Kazuhiko Chiba, and it just sounds like an opportunity for Niigata to really make something of their season. And as you were saying in the green room, John, they've got the coach is here for a second season. Can he drive things forward with a year under his belt? I think that Niigata are, very, very interesting and compelling looking team for the new season.
Okay, so to pin you down a little bit, Mike, I've got Niigata as a very real possibility of being in the top six, but I think they might be a little bit short at the back and possibly even in midfield to crack the top two. Akakichi no 11's, mentioned they conceded too many goals to go any higher than the kind of playoff, the phantom playoff zone, because there weren't any playoffs last year, of course. I think that's still a problem. I don't think they're too convincing. In the goalkeeper position or at centre back, even though Kazuhiko Chiba, you mentioned, has come back in. And Nagasaki Blue and Orange was asking, are they better than last season? I don't think they are at the back, really. Although I think they probably mitigated, midfield and the forwards, as we talked about. And I do think Koji Suzuki will score goals, providing he's fit, because he always scores goals in J2. So, what do you think, Mike? Do you feel like they're stronger than last season? And do you think they've got a good chance of getting into the top two, or will we have to wait and see?
I think that there are a few things which are going to impact upon that. I agree that they could have done more in terms of the defence, and in line with a couple of the remarks that we made in the first pod, which was doubtful remarks about quality of certain central defenders, I'm going to say Michael James, really that good? I'm not sure about that. And he's been retained. I will say that, so just to repeat a point about that I made earlier, that there are gaps in the squad for foreigners. So if they've got a bit of money and they need a bit of need a bit of mid-season impetus, then that could be sort of like forthcoming, and it could be influential. I think that with Albirex, I get the impression that they could have an up and a down or two during this season.
That would be very Niigata, I think. That's definitely something they do quite often.
But I don't preclude them. I don't preclude the possibility that they could finish in the top two. I think it's a possibility. If they don't improve, I think that will be very disappointing.
Fair enough. Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we will have to have a look at them and see how they set up and if they're a bit bit more organised defensively this year. I'll just give a quick shout out on the defence to the player that usually is in the sort of right back slot, Daichi Tagami, who was on loan from Kashiwa last season. His loan's been extended into this season. To be honest, I'm not sure why, because whenever I see him play, he looks good enough to get a game in Kashiwa's first team. So yeah, I really like him. Very mobile, very aggressive. Likes to shoot from quite long range. He's got a bit of a cannon of a right foot. So anyone who's watching, you got to closely look out for Daichi Tagami. I always really enjoy watching him. Okay, so the jury is still out on Niigata then, Mike, I think, based on our conversation. Let's talk, hopefully quite briefly, about Tokyo Verdy, who finished 12th last season under their manager Hideki Nagai. I'll go first on this one, if you don't mind. I think they possibly, just looking at the transfers out and the transfers coming in, or lack thereof, I think Tokyo Verdy will be... it's going to be very difficult for them to replicate a 12th place finish. And with the four relegation places this season, they might even find themselves looking over their shoulders at the wrong end of the table. I think if they have a bad start, they could find themselves in a bit of trouble, I think. We should also mention, without going into too much detail, there's been a lot of boardroom upheaval at Tokyo Verdy during the off-season, with a kind of hostile takeover from sort of majority shareholder Sabio, which is a kind of sportswear, you know, high street sportswear brand, amongst other things. But I think they've tried to sort of boot out some of the other shareholders and take over, principally because they want to get hold of Tokyo Verdy's very lucrative and incredibly well organised soccer school, you know, soccer academy side of things, which produces a lot of J leaguers, as you know. But yeah, what do you think about Tokyo Verdy? I know you've done your research, and I'm rambling. So what do you think about Tokyo Verdy, Mike?
I think it is interesting to note, you know, how kind of like bang in the middle they were last season. As you said, 12th in the table. I think they even had a neutral goal difference. And you know, one week they were capable of really, really beautiful football. And another week they could be sort of like torn apart. So very kind of like inconsistent, and it feels as if they're quite a fragile team. So how are they dealing with that for the new season? Well, it feels like they're gathering together an older squad. I mean, there are exceptions. So they have managed to hold on to Ryoya Yamashita, who was, you know, he's a very eye-catching player, isn't he? Very, very exciting and quick, a bit of an eye for goal. Often came on as a super sub and would score. It's, you know, it's difficult not to like him and the way that he would fit in with Shion Inoue and Joel Fujita, who have, as Verdy watchers will know, they've both moved on. But the players that they're sort of bringing in, they're older. And there's Ryota Kajikawa. He was a Verdy player before, wasn't he? He's been loaned back from Tokushima. And Koken Kato, he comes from Kitakyushu to take up one of those kind of midfield roles. And I think they're both 31. And then we discussed Boniface and Duca, didn't we, when we were talking about Mito? We were both a bit doubtful about that. I just don't think that there are all that many kind of super positives to make about positive points to make about Verdy. They've signed Seitaro Tomisawa as well, haven't they, from poor old Sagamihara. And he's 38 as a sort of like a veteran centre-back. I wish I could say more sort of positive things about the direction of travel for Verdy, but I don't really see it. And yeah, let's just say the four relegation places.
Yeah, I'm very worried about who's actually going to score the goals for Verdi this year. I think you're right to pick out Ryoya Yamashita because he was the kind of standout forward player last season. But I think he's going to be 19 this year. And I think he scored maybe seven or eight goals in 2020. So he might get double figures this time. But apart from him, you know, in terms of forwards, Yoshito Okubo, we mentioned he left and went to went back to Seretz Osaka. Leandro's retired, Ryohei Hayashi's retired, and they haven't brought in any forwards in their kind of, you know, transfer window. So it's down to a 19-year-old in Yamashita, and I think Jin Hanato is the other kind of registered forward. Now, I don't know how closely you've or how much you know about him. He's a very hard-working player, but the idea of him contributing double-digit goals is fanciful, I would suggest. He's a very hard-working player, but he's more about linking the play for others than scoring goals himself. So I think the only possibility that we might be overlooking is, I mentioned Verdi's academy, you know, youth system. They always seem to produce a player or two from absolutely nowhere, like Yamashita last season or Fujita last season, as we talked about. If they can do that again, they might be okay. There is a lot of buzz about one player, and particularly Yuan Matsushita, a forward. I think he's going to get game time by default at this rate, to be honest, because not many other strikers. But yeah, it'll be interesting. But it's hard to be positive, isn't it, when you look at the players that have gone out versus the players that have come in. So yeah, probably a tough 10 months potentially ahead, I think, for Verdi. Let's move on, Mike. Let's talk about another team in green who we're going to have more positives, I think, to say about them. Matsumoto Yamaga. Now, they finished 13th last year, which doesn't sound too bad. They had a great second half of the season, but compared to, I think, what fans were expecting, it was pretty disappointing, catastrophic, certainly in the first sort of the first half of the campaign. We had a question from Nagasaki Blue and Orange on Matsumoto. They seem to be expected to make quite a big jump this year. Do you think they've made any signings that are not big names but will be really important? And do you think they've lost anyone who they might not be able to replace? I think Matsumoto Yamaga are the team that's going to improve a lot potentially on 13th place this year. But what do you think of their ins and outs, Mike? Are there any hidden gems that we need not to overlook?
Well, the thing about Matsumoto is that they've just been so active in the transfer market. I think that I added up one or two of the sort of transfer lists, and I think that 26 players have left and 24 have joined. So when I'm doing this sort of like you know, my sort of prep for the pod, I'm looking to try to understand what I think that the coach is doing. And so an example from the previous one was Cho at Kyoto, and it seemed to me to be quite plain what it is that he's trying to do with his transfers. But with Shibata at Matsumoto, just the sheer busyness of the closed season activity makes it very difficult to get a clear sense of his plans. And then there's also things like the, you know, blink and you'll miss it release on the 7th of January. Serginho has been released after four seasons at Alwyn. You know, there's just a, you know, a press release kind of thing to say, you know, that's it. He's not coming back for another season. So it's just very hard to know what to make of it all, or to understand, you know, what kind of chance that gives Matsumoto of really improving. I mean, you know, and let's not forget that Shibata actually did pretty well in the second half of last season, as you said. So I'm not really sure why he's felt the need to be so kind of frantic. But what I did in the end was I picked out three players who've left and three players who've arrived, because I figured that I could talk about them. in the context of not really understanding what the broader context is. But so I'll just talk about the three arrivals. One of them I'm slightly cheating with. So there's a loan which has been made permanent. That's Masato Tokida. He was their sort of standout defender last season. He's a big lad. He's 187 centimetres tall, and he was there. If they had anybody organising their defence, it was him. And he looks like a good player, and his loan from Sendai has been made permanent. So he's one to watch. Another player who I think is interesting, Stuart would be able to talk about him better than I can, that's Paolo Junichi Tanaka. He's come from Yamaguchi. He's also played for Gifu and Kanazawa, skillful wide midfield player. I think I've always enjoyed watching him play. Interesting to think about whether he's going to be on the fringes of the team or if he can really make his mark at a bigger club. And also, on the basis that Lukao and Kazuma Yamaguchi are out of bounds, I'll talk about Kunitomo Suzuki. Maybe he was a bit sort of overshadowed at Kitakyushu by Disaro. A bit of a similar sort of a player, a skillful target man type. But I would have thought that maybe he will be Lukao's sort of stunt double, if I can put it like that. But want to watch Kunitomo Suzuki.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Lukao, I know we're sort of beholden by the question from Nagasaki Blue and Orange not to talk about these players, but Lukao was so impressive for Kanazawa. I'm sorry, for was it Kagoshima he played for last year? It's Kagoshima, wasn't it?
No, he was on loan from Kagoshima, but he played at Kanazawa.
Right, thank you. Yes, that's where making my notes 10 minutes before we start recording lets me down. Lukao, really impressive player because he's big and strong and has that battering ram quality, but he's also quick and skillful. I think in J2, it's not that often that you get a striker that can do both of those things. You usually have to have two players in order to have those options in your team, but he can do it in one. He did have a few injury problems last season at Kanazawa. I think he would have scored a lot more goals, obviously, if he'd been fit more. His duel with Tashiro in the game against Tochigi was an absolute classic, I remember, from last year. So I think Lukao is going to be really important. Kazuma Yamaguchi, as we know, is probably already too good to play in J2. I think he looks every inch a kind of J1 player. We should mention on him, you know, he's coming back from a very bad knee injury, isn't he? So he's probably not going to be ready, or at least not match fit, you know, early on in the season. And I think my gut feeling is that might help Matsumoto, because I think you're totally right. They've changed so many players. There's been a kind of almost scorched earth policy, you know, of getting rid of anybody who's left over from the kind of the Sorimachi kind of era. If you like. I think it will take them some time to click. But to piggyback on something you mentioned earlier, Mike, I think this is a good season to have a slow start, because I do think it's going to be, you know, the fact that there aren't two teams coming down from J1 and automatically being promotion favourites means I think you can get away with almost treading water for the first maybe 8, 10, 12 rounds. Before you work out what your best system is and your best players are. And then if at that point you can then bring in a kind of recovered and fit Kazumi Yamaguchi into the team, I think that could be a positive for Matsumoto almost. For me, I think the top six looks like a very achievable goal with the players at their disposal. I mentioned Shuto Kawai, who's coming from Ryukyu as well, who I really like in the midfield. I think if everything clicks for them, they could be a top two contender as well. And I'll go as far as to say, from the teams that we're discussing in this preview, the seven teams that we've got on our slate at the moment, I think they're the most likely to be a promotion challenger this season. I don't know what you think about that. Am I going too far, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think what we're finding when we're talking about these teams is, you know, we're talking about the length of the season. aren't we? And we're talking about the notion of there being sort of ups and downs, and we didn't find ourselves kind of like needing to talk about that or making reference to it in the first pod. But these kinds of teams like Niigata and Matsumoto, who were clearly sort of like more towards the middle of the table, you know, they're not ruled out, are they? They're not ruled out by having a let's call it a slow start. And I think that expanding upon this idea a little bit, I think that we could have a situation whereby, you know, if you're hanging in there, say in the top 10 or something like that, but at the midpoint in the season, you're probably going to have a chance. You're probably going to have a chance because I don't think that anybody's going to be really good this season.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, isn't it? I mean, 24 players coming in is pretty. I suppose you could say for Shibata, he's trimmed the squad, albeit only by one player, by moving 26 out and bringing 24 in. So, it's going to be. I do think one thing about Matsumoto is I think there's a lot of expectation that they will do better this year, whereas I think some of the other clubs. If they finish 13th, like Tochigi, for example, you know, if they finish 10th again, you know, Kazuaki Tasaka will be, fated as a kind of legendary manager. Whereas if Matsumoto only finished 10th, then I think there'll be another change of manager probably and more upheaval. So, that could count against them, I guess, or it could go in their favour. We'll have to wait and see. Is there anything else you want to say about Matsumoto before we move on, Mike, or...?
I just wanted to answer, to provide a bit more of a direct answer to your question about them and Niigata. I've taken a guess at the number of points that those two, or all the teams will gain. Clearly, that's a bit of a crazy idea, but I've given it a go just to try and make this a little bit more real. And I have given Niigata more points than Matsumoto. In my estimates,
that's very interesting. You see, I would probably have gone the other way, but by the end of this pod, I'll probably have changed my mind and fallen in line, I suppose. Yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, I think just one more point on Matsumoto from Nagasaki Blue. And she was asking, have they lost anyone who they may not be able to replace? I think you mentioned him already. It's Serginho for me, but it's interesting when we talk about losing him because I think they just didn't renew his contract, right? Or they released him. So they seem to have lost him on purpose. So that's an interesting one. I mean, obviously lots of players have come in and we might not be talking about the absence of Serginho during the season, but that seems like a strange one for me. I don't know why you wouldn't keep him around, but maybe there's more to that than meets the eye. There might be some things that we don't know.
Yeah, I think add to that, and bearing in mind the question that we've been asked, I think that he is actually the most obvious player. So who they might not be able to replace, because I think that some of the other kind of like some of the other really decent looking players, I can see that who are leaving. I can see that Matsumoto probably will be. Able to replace, for example, Koki Tsukagawa. He looked a good player, and he's gone to Kawasaki, and maybe Yamaguchi kind of slots into something a little bit like his role. I'm not saying they're exactly the same sort of player, but as somebody who is kind of off a main striker, perhaps in that sense, a little bit similar. So I think kind of he does have a replacement. Also, Ryo Takahashi, he really did well under Shibata on the left-hand side of defence, and he was pretty much ignored in the first half of the season. He's going to Shonan, and I would imagine we spoke in the other pod about Ryo Toyama from Mito. I think he's going to come in and find that place on the the left-hand side of defence or sort of wing-back kind of position. So I think it's really Serginho is the obvious answer to the question that we've been asked.
Yeah, I think Matsumoto is definitely a team that I'm looking forward to watching just in the first month or so, just to see how they set up and how many of these 24 new additions actually, you know, are appearing in the first team on a regular basis. It's going to be interesting. Okay, Mike, 14th place last season. Our good friends Jeff Chiba occupied that slot in 2020. We had questions from Navy Blue Wasp about Jeff and Kanazawa Dreaming. Navy Blue Wasp asking, Jeff have signed some familiar faces. Will we see a relatively good year or a bad year for Jeff, brackets again, which is very appropriate, I think, when it comes to talking about Jeff. From Kanazawa Dreaming, this is slightly tongue-in-cheek. On a scale of 1 to Jeff, how Jeffy will Jeff be? So we can give the easy answers, can't we? And will we see a good year or a bad year? If Jeff, don't know. On a scale of 1 to Jeff, how Jeffy will be, they'll be Jeff. To give some more context, Mike, what do you think of Chiba's transfer business and the prospects in 2021?
Chiba's transfer business, not. I don't think that much. There's not a massive amount to go on there here, is there? I think this is one of those. It feels like one of those situations whereby the focus of attention is on the coach. So to that extent, it feels a bit sort of like same old Jeff, because you're looking for that kind of influence to change the direction of the club. And I note that during last season, I think Stuart commented that he Yoon could reasonably have been both fired and walked out. But given that not only did he last until the end of the season, but he was very quickly awarded an extension for 2021, I guess now we'll see what he and his team are made of. But yeah, as I say, the kind of like the outgoings and the incomings, they're not sort of massively exciting, are they? They've lost Kleber. He's gone to Yokohama FC. I'm not quite sure why a J1 scout would ignore him scoring 17 goals in 2019, but think he's the guy for us when he scores 7 in 2020. But something like that. I might have got that the wrong way around. But he's definitely had a decline. And he's gone, and Keita Yamashita has gone to Sagan Tosu. Yuki Horigome, did okay on the right-hand side of midfield, but he was a bit in and out of the team. It's not a surprise to see him leaving. Doing a lot of business with Cerezo Osaka seems slightly concerning, because Cerezo just had a crazy off-season.
They're the sort of Sagamihara of J1, aren't they?
They are, for some very strange reason. We've got Daisuke Suzuki, who's come in from Urawa. I mean, not the best player in the world, but he can add some experience to the middle of the defence. But in terms of J2 related transfers, that probably the highlight is maybe Otsuki from Yamagata, Shuhei Otsuki. He's scored 19 goals over the last couple of seasons, and he's a pretty tidy J2 striker. But there's not a lot to get excited about, is there, really, at Chiba?
I think you've hit the nail on the head talking about excitement, Mike. For me, there is a pattern with these transfers of Yoon Jung-hwan, the coach. I think if you look at the ins and outs in terms of transfers, goals and flair are going out of the door, and a little bit more steel is coming in. Whether that will actually be reflected on the pitch, we will have to wait and see, because we're talking about Jeff Chiba here, so that the best laid plans don't always work. But I will say that in terms of conceding goals, I fully expect them to concede at least 10 fewer, because Yuya Sato the goalkeeping lunatic, has finally been moved on. He's gone to Kumamoto. So hopefully there'll be, we probably will have highlights reels of him messing around on the halfway line, but at least it'll be for somebody different. I think you're right to mention some of the other players. Did Shuhei Otsuki coming in from Yamagata. Again, hard working forward, but you wouldn't associate him with flair, I don't think, or excitement. And goals have gone out of the team. There's no two ways about that, because Kleber has gone, as you mentioned. KTM Ashton has gone. Alan Pinheiro, who was a sort of cameo striker a lot of the time, he's been released. And there's a lot of question marks coming in for the striker they brought in, Saldana, who's coming in from a Brazilian team that we don't really know anything about, or I don't think. I know he's very tall. I don't have the centimetres, but I know he's a big forward, so he's the Kleber replacement, but we don't know if he's going to, you know, if he's going to fit, if he's going to gel. Takaki Fukumitsu's come in from Seretsoseki, you mentioned. Again, not the most flair player, although he's very technically very good, I think. So we'll see. I think I went bold here. I do think they'll improve, certainly defensively, from last year, but I don't think there's enough quality in the squad for them to be any higher than maybe 10th, 8th maybe. If they have a great season, they might finish 8th. So I don't see them challenging for promotion in any real way. It'll be another season of treading water. But I think, considering the state they were in at times last year, and when Yoon Jung-kwan took over, they probably see going from 14th to 9th or 8th as a reasonable step in the right direction. What do you reckon?
Yes, I've got them down for a small improvement. Yeah, not for any particularly sort of like inspiring reason. But I think that, to be fair, that probably constitutes quite a success for the way that this club have been
mismanaged.
Well, yeah, mismanaged is perhaps one. Yeah, but just I was going to go for a kind of sort of like eccentric, you know. Over the last sort of decade or so, however long it is since they've been in J2, because making a small improvement on the basis of a coach who stays into his second season and tries to focus on tightening up the defence, that's a rational thing, and that to me feels like de-Jeffing Jeff.
I think if any supporters in Japan deserve a boring season, it's got to be Jeff's supporters at this point. So yeah, perhaps they'll be glad of some, you know, goalless draws or 1-0, you know, 1-0 shutouts. So yeah, we'll see. I think I agree with you. I think in summary, Jeff is still Jeff, but I think a small improvement's probably on the cards, or at least I hope so, for the sake of some of my Jeff supporting friends' sanity. Let's move on, Mike. I've been itching to ask you about the next team on our preview schedule. It's the team that finished 15th last year, Omiya Ardija, of course, the side which from which your Twitter handle is ultimately derived. They're the only team in this part of our preview that have changed managers during the off-season, with Ken Iwase coming in. And we had questions on that and on their transfers. So Navy Blue Wasp again asks, Omiya have signed a lot of young guns, but doesn't seem like they've improved much. Do you think they'll finish in the top 10 this time? And my good friend Steve at RDJ01 Talk asks, what can we tell him about the new manager, Ken Iwase, his tactics and style of play? For me, it's nothing. I'll be honest, Steve, I don't know anything. So, and does he have the players to achieve his style of play? And what do we think about the ins and outs of the squad? So, the floor's yours, Mike. What do you think about Omiya?
Well, I'll try and give Steve an answer to his question about the manager. So there's almost no sort of solid evidence here, is there really, as regards his tactics. But what I can say is that he seems to have been using a straight 4-4-2 in the preseason games, And also his experience as an actual coach, you know, the sort of kantoku as it's referred to in Japan, you know, the guy in charge, that actually boils down to a grand total of two games. So he was in charge right at the end of the 2018 season at Kashiwa. And if you sort of like burrow through the records to find out what that might show, he was a 4-4-2 guy there as well. In order to increase the drama, you know, add a bit of sort of like a tantalizing aspect to a narrative arc, I will not tell you yet what the results of those two games were.
It's very exciting to tease. Yeah. What about the ins and outs during the transfer window, Mike?
Okay, well, if we start with the players who have left, I don't think that there are going to be very many tears shed by all their supporters about the players who about any of the players who've gone. There are maybe a couple of exceptions. First of all, Ippei Shinozuka, he's gone to Kashiwa Reysol. Not much of a surprise to see him moving on. He's obviously a very kind of a skillful player, quite a technical player, quite creative. And he can't waste any more of his career in the bottom half of J2. I mean, he is 25 now, and so, you know, perfectly reasonably, he's accepted an offer from Kashiwa. It could also be that Shoei Yoshinaga, who's sort of notionally, I think he's notionally a forward, but hasn't really played in that much of an attacking role. He's only 20. And he's come up through the sort of youth system. He hasn't really had any chances to show what he can do, and he takes the well-trodden path to Gunma on loan. But apart from that, there's nothing really sort of like worth getting terribly upset about. The list of new signings to me doesn't suggest that there's been a particular plan to address the issues at the la of last season. But I think, as we were talking about in the green room, John, the standout names are pretty much unquestionably Seiya Nakano from Iwata and Eitaro Matsuna, who's come from Marinos. Although he spent a proportion of a few matches at the beginning of last season on loan at Sagamihara, where he looked really good, and then he went back to Marinos and played a few games in their first team. So I don't think there's much beyond those two guys. They certainly look a cut above in terms of the quality. A couple of sort of like anecdotes for a bit of local colour for you, John. So, at the season launch event on YouTube, I did kind of watch most of that, and you know, you can see like a live chat now when when they do that sort of sort of live event. There was so you can see what people are writing and commenting, and the technical director guy, who's a very nervous-looking fellow, who's responsible for assembling the squad. There was a sort of a mass online booing and, you know, unchi emojis and all of that kind of stuff while this guy was talking. It was really very funny indeed. And then the other sort of local colour kind of anecdote is Omiya's best player of 2020, Atsushi Kurokawa. He was at first not given a squad number for 2021 because at that time he was negotiating with a foreign club, reputed to be Lechia Gdansk. But eventually he failed a fitness test at that foreign club and so has come back to Omiya under the least promising circumstances possible. It all seems a bit like a metaphor for something, along with the fact that they have both loaned out to and had loaned back from a young goalkeeper from Kitakyushu. I don't know what that, don't know what any of it means, John. I don't know what any of it means. The whole thing, it could go in any direction, up and indeed, I have to say, down.
I'm sensing that just based on the comments that you're making about kind of mass poo emojis spamming the sort of season launch chat box on YouTube. I feel like maybe Ken Iwase might be finding the hot seat very uncomfortably hot by Golden Week or, you know, August if things things aren't going well. But I agree with you. I think the points you made are pretty unarguable about Almia. I will say on a positive note, obviously Iba, you know, a striker with a sort of excellent track record in J2, was signed mid-season last year. Unfortunately, got injured quite quickly after joining and wasn't able to play much part in what was essentially a kind of a, you know, damp squib of a second half of the season for Almia. It's pretty obvious they weren't going to be challenging for the top two at that point. If he's back and banging and he's fully fit this year, that will be like signing a new player, I think, and a player, you know, who is capable of getting 15, 20 goals if he can stay fit and the service is good. So that's a potential wild card that we should mention. If Iba comes back and can make a big difference, then that could see Almia heading in the right direction. You got feeling, Mike, where do you think Almia could finish? I think top 10 looks doable with the squad they have, but I don't see them any higher than, if they have an amazing season, maybe sixth place. I can't see them challenging the top two. I've been wrong before, though. What do you think?
If I have to answer that question, like you, John, I've given them a small improvement, Chiba style kind of thing. But I think that the possibilities of Almia becoming the next Chiba, I think that possibility exists. I think that nothing would really surprise me. I mean, you know, we have to remember that 12 months ago, Almia were a big club in J2. And from the previous season, they just missed out on promotion. And quite a lot of people were coming into the 2020 season thinking, yeah, Almia should be able to go up. And now, we're talking about, oh, I wonder if they'll be able to get in the top 10. This is a massive kind of like downgrading for the club. And again, as I was saying in the green room, I think it's possible for, if everything clicks, if Iba is fit, he's a guaranteed goals guy. He's got a lot of experience and really knows how to score at this level of football. You know, anything can happen, but at the same time, the club's trajectory is not good. It's not good, and they've elected to bring in somebody who has two games worth of experience to kind of guide them through this this particularly important period. So, you know, I mentioned in the last pod that because of the four teams going down, you know, that could see some big clubs have a very uncomfortable time. I don't rule it out.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the honest answer is there's just too many unknowns about Ken Iwase, aren't there? Tell us about his managerial record then, Mike. What did he do in his two games?
I talk about the narrative arc, and this really sort of like if I was drawing that narrative arc, it would be left with a jagged line right at the end of it. Because he was in charge at Kashima Racehall for the last two games of the 2018 season, and they won both of them, 3-0 away at Cereso and 4-2 at home to Gamba. But you know, he did have players like, Segawa and Estaca and Cristiano at his disposal.
But he must be the first manager that Omi have hired that has like a 100% record, so.
That is the sunniest possible interpretation of these circumstances. Yes.
Yeah, maybe the general manager that you mentioned, perhaps he saw the 100% record but didn't bother to check how many games that record actually spanned. I don't know. We'll wait and see. Yeah, it's gonna be very interesting, Mike, watching Omia this year. I, like you, I just don't know enough about the team at the moment to be confident. But yeah, like I strongly suspect, like Ken Iwase. Mike, we're running out of time here for our season preview pod for part two. So there's one more team we're going to talk about before we wrap up this show. It's FC Ryukyu. They finished in 16th place in 2020. They've kept the same manager, Yasuhiro Higuchi. I think much to Jeff Osborne's consternation, I suppose it would be fair. Just looking at the squad as it stands for Ryukyu, I suspect a long season. Is coming up for them, especially defensively. They're probably going to be okay, but I do think they could struggle. You know, as we mentioned on Tokyo Verde, with four relegation places this year, is going to be very attritional, I think, in that bottom third of the table. What do you think about FC Ryukyu?
Yeah, Higuchi, he's not great, is he? He's not the person that you want leading your team in this kind of circumstance. I don't think. So, yeah, this is a really tough one, isn't it? Not very many clubs have been quieter in the close season than Ryukyu. They've retained a lot of players. Who got a lot of starts in 2020. The goalkeeper. Tanaka and Numata in defence, the Kazuma brothers in midfield, Takuma Abe, you know, very, very important player up front. Two key players have departed, Koizumi to Urawa, and as you mentioned before, John Kawai to Matsumoto, you know, both very, very good players, and sort of no-brainers to want to be moving into a higher level of football, which they are, you know, fully capable of doing. What have they done? They have, for some reason, they have gone to Okayama for two strikers. Shingo Akamine, he's 37. A long time ago, he was a very good goal scorer, but he's one of these sort of like... I don't know, maybe he's like a dressing room veteran kind of figure, or he's being primed for a coaching role. And then we've got Shintaro Shimizu. He's got J2 experience from Mito and Okayama and Omiya, but he's not prolific. He won't score goals to move you up the table. Key newcomer to me. I don't know what you think, John, but a key newcomer to me looks like being Koki Kiyotake. He's got good J2 experience with Kumamoto and Chiba. He was a bit kind of squeezed out at Tokushima over the last couple of seasons, but he looks a good player. Physical, with an eye for the spectacular. I think he'll be, very sort of, he'll add something to go alongside Abe. But yeah, I don't think that there's. I'm looking for evidence which will help me to believe that they're going to improve, and I'm struggling to find it.
I think you're right to highlight Koki Kiyotake as being a key player in terms of transfers coming in. He is a good footballer. He's very streaky though. And he couldn't really nail down a regular starting place at Jeff. Then he went to Tokushima, and you mentioned he got squeezed out there. So I have a feeling, just looking at Ryukyu's squad, he's not going to get the luxury of like rotation. It doesn't seem like he's going to be playing a lot. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what his form, what his form is like, during the season. You know, talking about ups and downs as we have a lot in this show. I think for me. We talked about Tokyo Verde already and how short they are up front. You know, they're just really lacking bodies, you know, in the forward positions. For Ryukyu, it's the reverse, isn't it? Their big problem last season was defending, and they just don't seem to have shown any interest in addressing that. I think they've brought in, I'm not sure if my transfer kind of check-in's up to date, they brought in three new defenders, but they're all university graduates with no J-League experience, really. Well, they haven't played any games in the J-League. So, I mean, that doesn't inspire confidence. I don't think it's going to be... It really doesn't matter if you can score two or three goals in a game. If you're letting in the same amount, you're not going to be collecting many points. And I can't understand why... I guess I can't believe that there aren't some defenders available that could have been brought in to bolster that back line, which at times last year, I mean, Ryukyu had some absolutely scintillating attacking displays, didn't they, last season in some games, scoring six here and five there, for example. But some of the defending was pretty horrible. I mean, the amount of times, I mean, Lee Yong-jik used to play for Tokyo Verde, and he alternated between defensive midfield, attacking midfield, and up front. They never played him in defence, but I think I saw him at right back and at centre back far too many times at Ryukyu last year, and he looks terrible there, and it's not entirely his fault. He's just completely out of position, you know, being thrown under the bus. And I think we're heading for a repeat of that at the moment. And yeah, 16th place last season was okay, but I don't think the squad, well, the squad looks weaker to me. So I think they're probably going to be lower than that, aren't they, this year?
I think that's that is very possible, yeah. On my notes, I don't have a complete list of the transfer ins and outs. I've sort of, you know, given edited highlights kind of thing to make it a bit more manageable. And yeah, under the heading arrivals, I haven't got any defenders. None of them I thought were kind of like a big enough deal for me really to kind of bother with. So yeah, there's kind of nothing there. Indeed, one of the highlights which I thought was interesting, if nothing else, was they've got a 17-year-old midfield player who they've given a first team squad number to. He's called Sho Sawada, and his registration was previously held by a Spanish team. So heaven knows what that's about.
Yeah, I wonder if we're just seeing as well, you know, just kind of the economics of last season, you know, with coronavirus as well playing a part in this. I'm sure there are a lot of other teams as well. You must have had targets in mind for players that they wanted, but just financially, you know, it's been a really difficult winter for a lot of teams. I think in the next part of our season preview, this is something that's probably going to come up again with one or two other teams that we talk about. But yeah, it's kind of a shame to end part two on a bit of a downer, Mike. But unfortunately, as we go further down the table, this is kind of there's an inevitability about it, isn't there? But yeah, on the positive side, yeah, I do think Koki Kiyotake is a good player. And I think Shinji Ono's left, hasn't he? He's gone back to Sapporo, so perhaps Shingo Akamine is going to take over his role of sitting on the bench with like legs strapped in ice, you know, ice packs pointing, which seems to be a very important part of the Ryukyu's tactics. But yeah, Mike, thanks a lot for your analysis and your insight. Again, I really enjoyed talking about all the teams that we covered in this part of the season preview. Hopefully you won't mind joining me again in a few days to you know, look at part three. We'll talk about the other six teams from last season's J2, and we'll also talk about Akita and Sagamihara, who are coming up obviously from J3 this year. So eight teams to talk about in part three. Is there anything else you want to mention, any closing comments for this part of our season preview?
Not today, I think, John. I was lucky enough to be able to sort of wax lyrical at the end of the first pod. But as always, you know, there's stacks to talk about, isn't there? There's stacks of interest, even if we can't always be, you know, sunnily optimistic in our previews of individual clubs. And I'm sure that we'll be able to, you know, be similarly insightful in the next round of previews.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. And we should mention, of course, you know, one of at least one of these teams that we've talked about, you know, today is going to surprise us, aren't they? Hopefully in a positive way. So we might be we might be talking about some kind of surprise team that kind of defied expectations from our preview in due course. Okay, Mike, thanks a lot for joining me. It's much appreciated. And yeah, thanks to all the listeners for listening, downloading. We really appreciate that too. If you support us on Patreon, obviously, yeah, we're very grateful, and we take that support very seriously. And yeah, we try to put out content as good as we can for you. So thanks for that. And enjoy your week. And please look forward to part three of our J2 season preview. It's coming up soon. But that's all for this show. So take care, and we'll speak soon. Bye for now.